Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Samach Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Samach Vov, third line from the top, we notice a triangle. In fact, you will notice that this is found in the middle of a very long Tanaic source that began on the previous Daf. We are, in fact, in the middle of a series of Tanaic proofs to the idea or the fact that Havuas HaOmer and the Sfira, the bringing of the Omer offering and the counting of the Omer, are to start on the 16th of Nisan, the day after the first day of Pesach. So we continue in this sugya that we started in our previous shiur with the third line from the top, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Mimochros HaShabbos. The expression in the pasuk that refers to the Omer, which says Mimochros HaShabbos, means Mimochros Yom Tov. Even though the word Shabbos appears, the word Shabbos can connote Yom Tov as well, the holiday. Ato Mimochros Yom Tov, you claim it means that, oh, eino elo Mimochros Shabbos Breishis. Maybe Mimochros Shabbos means the day after Saturday. Shabbos Breishis is an expression that we've seen already before, meaning a standard Saturday. And it would mean the Shabbos, the Saturday of the holiday, in other words, the day after the Saturday of the holiday. Amris, answer. V'chinemar Mimochros HaShabbos Shebesoch HaPesach. Does it say that? It doesn't say from the day after Shabbos that falls out in the middle of Pesach. V'halo lo nemar elo Mimochros HaShabbos. All it says is after the Shabbos. D'chol Hashona Kulam Leo Shabbosos. The whole year is filled with Shabbosos. Tse uvdok eze Shabbos. Based on the Pesach itself, go check out which Shabbos. You can't figure out which Shabbos from a rather vague reference of Mimochros HaShabbos. And if the Pasuk is telling us to start counting the Omer from a specific time, namely Mimochros HaShabbos, and it's a time that I can't figure out if I'm going to base myself on a Saturday standard, therefore it must mean the first day of Pesach, which is called Shabbos as well. The Oid, and furthermore, this is a second stage or a second proof Rabbi Yossi brings to this point. Nemro Shabbos Lamata, it says Shabbos in the context of Shavuos. The Nemro Shabbos Lamalo, and it says Shabbos in the context of the Omer. Ma lahalon regel utrilas regel, just like by Shavuos, the term Shabbos is clearly referring to the holiday and the beginning of the holiday. Afkan, so too, with regard to the Omer, the word Shabbos is a reference to regel utrilas regel. It's a reference to the holiday and the beginning part of the holiday, the 16th of Nisan being very close to the 15th, which is the beginning of the holiday, Pesach. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, now we turn to a new Tanaic authority, Rabbi Shimon Elazar, he says, there are two psukim, Kosuv Echod Omer Sheshes Yomim Toichal Matzos. One pasuk indicates that matzah consumption takes place for 6 days. The Kosuv Echod Omer Shivas Yomim Matzos Tochelu. 7 days one shall consume matzahs. On the very surface, it would seem to be a contradiction in numbers. Ha Ketzad, how do we resolve this? Answer. Matzah she'i ato yochel le'oichlo shiva min hechodosh, Ato yochol loichlo shisha min hachodosh. Chodosh is a term referring to the new grains. The grains that had been planted earlier that season and took root, and with the bringing of the oimer, the new grains become mutter for the public consumption. The psukim are telling us that matzah made from grains that you cannot eat for 7 days, a full 7 days, you can, however, eat for 6 days. That's a reference to the matzahs that one might make from the new grains. Since the first day of Pesach, you haven't as yet brought the oimer, the new grains are not mutter for matzahs that you would eat on the first day of Pesach. But since you bring the oimer on the second day of Pesach, so from the second day of Pesach till the end of Pesach, there are 6 days. Therefore, the resolution of the pasuk involves a proof, so to speak, that the omer is brought on the second day of Pesach, the 16th of Nisan. With that interpretation, then we, as we just learned before, we are able to resolve the two psukim. The pasuk indicating 6 days is telling us this is matzah that's made from the new grains that you cannot eat for 7 days. You can eat only for 6 days of Pesach. Of course, it goes without saying, the pasuk that says, that speaks in the positive, Shivas Yomim Matzos Techelu, in this context would mean matzahs that you made from the old grain, so that, in fact, you could eat for 7 days. But as far as the resolution of the two psukim, that is accomplished by inserting this idea of the matzahs made from the new grains that you can eat only for 6 days, because the omer is brought on the 16th of Nisan. And that's Rav Shimon ben Elazar's proof. As we go further in the Tanaic source, we are going to be interpreting the pasuk that deals with the Omer in Vayikra Perek Chof Gimel. We will also see some new markings that appear as we go on. The double underline appears and a diamond appears. And the outside margin under our Nosei Mivneh heading, and the Nosei being the topic, and Mivneh structural note that accompanies every new sugya in the marking system. The double underline represents Shlavei Birur. We're reading the outside note, Shlavei Birur, stages in clarifying Pirush HaPsukim, the explanation of these Psukim, Kedei Lodas, Mosai Koitzun Oimer, Mosai Sofrim. With this section of Gemara, we will determine when the harvesting of the grains for the Omer takes place, and when we do the counting of the Omer. There is a diamond that appears also featuring the word E, which is an attempt on the part of this Brisa to present Hava Aminas, attempted ideas that we have to, deflect as we go on step by step. So we turn back to the Brisa, Miyoim Haviyachem Tisperu. There's a Rashi that points out on the upper part of the page, Miyom Haviyachem, Hochi Mashma, Mishiagia Mimochros HaShabos, Tehu Yoim Haviyachem, from the point that the 16th of Nisan comes, which is the day of the bringing of the Omer, Huchshuru Svira, Misha Shetirtze, Im Bo Bayom, Im Mochar. From this phrase, one would think that the time for counting is optional. In other words, all that is necessary is the bringing of the Omer. That signifies a point in time from which you can start counting. As to when to start counting, from this phrase alone, it would sound, well, whenever, from the time you bring it or any time later. But this, of course, is not true. So, turning back to the source, we read this pasuk again, Yom HaViyachem Tisperu, Yochoyol Yiktzor V'yovi, Ve'emosai Shiyirtze Yispor. Are we to think that you harvest, bring the Omer, and whenever you like, count? Talmud Loimar, therefore there's another pasuk in Devarim Perek Yud Zayin that says, Mehochel Chermesh Bakamo Tochel Uspor. The word chermesh is a sickle, the knife used for cutting grains, and koma are the standing grains. So this pasuk is telling us from the point that you do the cutting, the harvesting of the grains, and prior to the bringing, you start the counting. So we have this pasuk, we'll say, boxes us into a time, namely, after the cutting of the grains, after the harvesting, and before the bringing of the omer. E mehochel chomesh chermesh tochel ispor. If I would have just that, yochol yiktzor v'yispor v'mosai shiyirtze yavi. Should I understand that one cuts the grains, starts the counting, and whenever he wants, brings the omer? Talmud lomar miyom haviachem. The Rashi on this says, Talmud Lomar miyom haviachem, demashma lo huchshura sfira, elo mishiagia yoim havo. The ability to count does not set in until the day of bringing the Omer comes. So that if you established that from the time of the cutting, the counting starts, When I add miyom haviachem, I realize that the counting is associated with the bringing of the omer. So that if you're telling me that's when the counting starts, it must be that that's when the bringing starts, in or bringing takes place. E miyom haviachem. If I would have just that, yochol yiktzor v'yispor v'yovi bayoim. Should I understand this to mean that you do the cutting, the harvesting, the counting, and the bringing all during the daytime? Talmud Lomar. Therefore, we have Vayikra Chof Gimel that tells us, Sheva Shavosus Tmimos Tiena, which means 7 complete weeks of counting. Amos Ayat Moitse Sheva Shavosus Tmimos. When or under what circumstances do you have 7 complete weeks? Bizman shata maslim lois mi bo'erev. When the counting starts at night. It may be pointed out that in the Jewish calendar, the day or the date begins with the previous night. So if you talk about a complete unit of time, you have to be talking about the night that precedes that particular day, so that we can with this say that the counting is not going to take place during the daytime. Well, we continue. Yochol yiktzor v'yovi v'yispor b'layla. Should I then understand that you do the harvesting and the bringing and the counting at night? Talmud lomar miyoim haviachem. Here the pasuk emphasizes daytime for bringing. Ha-ketzad. So how am I to resolve the concept of Sheva Shabosos Tmimois with Miyoim Haviachem? Ketzira Usfira Balayla, the actual harvesting of the grains and the counting that takes place at night. V'havo B'yom, and the bringing of the Omer offering that takes place during the day that follows. Omar Rava. At this point, we have a topic heading that accompanies this section, and we've written under our Nosei heading, Rava Oimer de Kamo Mehaichochois de Liel, that a number of the proofs that we had above as far as establishing that the 16th of Nisan is the date for the bringing and the counting of the Omer, that those are Yesh Lahan Pircha. In the parentheses, we've written the Havuah Soimer Usfira Havu Betez Zayin Nisan. These were proofs that we had above that the bringing of the Omer and the counting take place on the 16th of Nisan. They have a weakness to them. They can be challenged. So Rava will mention a number of the above sources or authorities can be challenged. There will be a couple, though, that Rava says remain firm. As far as the structure of the Gemara is concerned, what we will do is first read two lines of Gemara and then refer to the Mivneh heading. Omar Rava, Kulhu Isluhu Pircha, all of the above authorities have a weakness to them, can be questioned. Bar Mitarti Tanoi Basroi, with the exception of the final two opinions of the Tanoim, Bein b'masnisa komaisa, Bein b'masnisa basraisa, the less lehu pircha. With the exception of the final two authorities in the first Tanaic source that we saw on the Afsamachei, they were Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. And the final two opinions in the second Tanaic source, and that includes the V'oid comment of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. They are here above that we learned earlier in today's Shiur. These four citations, two and two, do not have a refutation. And now we see a house form at the end of the line. Under our Mivneh heading, we've indicated E. This word E is going to be marked off. This word introduces the double underline with a design in it, which are Hadgoshas Hatano, the Olav Yesh Pircha. These will be marking off, this double underline with design in it will be marking off the names of the Tanoim that can be challenged. It's also worth noting in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, we've indicated the two encircled expressions with vertical dashed lines that follow. The first one says Deos Komaisa, the opinions in the first source that are to be challenged. And the second circled expression, you see Deos Baisraisa, that represents the opinions in the second source that stand to be challenged. So we now turn to the Gemara and the questions raised on those authorities. So, E mida Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, if one were to try to learn from his approach, he had two psukim that he cited. One pasuk emphasized days, and the other pasuk emphasized weeks. And from that, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said that it's a reference to the 16th of Nisan, and that you'll have 7 weeks in the event that the 16th of Nisan comes out on a Sunday. Then you can talk about complete weeks. And if the 16th of Nisan comes out in the middle of the week, then we don't talk about complete weeks, but rather we talk about a counting of 50 days. So if you are going to let's say accept that approach, so the Gemara says you could challenge that. Dilma kida Abaye, maybe the two psukim, the weeks and the days psukim respectively, are to teach me something else. In other words, not date, but rather Abaye's teaching. Dilma kida Abaye, di Omar Abaye, mitzvah lemimni yaimi, u mitzvah lemimni shivui. That in the counting, there's a mitzvah to take note of the specific day and the week as well. So that according to Abaye, the two psukim, as we said, don't teach me something concerning date, but rather how the counting takes place, whereby we mention in our counting the day and the week. E mid Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, if you are going to rely on their approach, Rabbi Lezer spoke about the counting tisporlochi, the counting is totally in based in. And something being totally in based in indicates something other than a Saturday. A Saturday, a Shabbos, is a day that people know even without the based in being involved. But nevertheless, who says that That's a reference to the 16th of Nisan, namely the beginning of the holiday. And Rabbi Yehoshua also mentioned this idea of Somuch Lebi'ah Nikeres, that it, the time for the Omer, for the counting, is a point in time that you would know the date, because Rabbi Yehoshua mentioned count days and establish a month, and count days and establish the 50. Well, and he wanted to say that just like counting the days with regard to a month starts at a particular date, the 29th of a month is a date that you start counting toward the next month, so too with regard to Shavuos. Well, but nevertheless, granted that from Rabbi Yehoshua you learn the concept of a date, and with regard to Rabbi Elazar, granted that we learn that we're not talking about Shabbos Brachos, but as the Gemara says, Mimai de Biyom Tov Rishon Koi, who says that from them I can establish clearly the first day of Pesach, namely Mimochras HaShabbos after the first day of Pesach. Dilma Biyom Tov Achron Koi, maybe it's a reference to the day after the final day of Pesach, because the final day of Pesach also is something that has a fixed date, a known date, and that would conform also to the teaching that Rabbi Eliezer mentioned, something totally based in, and that which Rabbi Yehoshua mentioned, a date that's nicker, a clear date that's recognized. So as far as those three Tanoim, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Rabbi Lezer, and Rabbi Yehoshua, the names that we've double underlined, they are, let's say, weak in proving specifically the 16th of Nisan. However, the Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yehuda, Ben Beseiro, Les Lehu, Pircha, those are the two final names in the first source that are not challenged. They are not to be challenged. Now, we turn to the names in the second source. First, those that can be challenged. E midir Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. If I was to rely on Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda's approach, Have Amina, I might have thought, Dilmo Chamshin Labar Mehani Shisa. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda introduced the problem, so to speak, that if you were going to count from Saturday, then at times you would not have necessarily just 50 days from the 2nd of Nisan. You could have 51 days, 52 days, 53, got up to 56. So we say, maybe in fact, you do start counting from Sunday of Pesach. And the fact that the Pasuk makes a reference to 50, it means Dilmo Chamshin Lebar Mehani Shisa. It means 50 days besides the additional days, Shisa 6. But as Rashi says, the 6 is Lav Dafka, not specifically 6, but any of the days above the basic 50. So that the Torah maybe is concerning itself with the idea that there is a basic 50 days that one counts, even though there may in fact be more days between the second day of Pesach and the coming of Shavuos. Rashi, let us look at what he says inside. Dilmo Chamshin Miyoim Shemas Halimnos. Maybe the 50 is 50 from the day you start counting, Dainu Achar Shabbos. It is a reference to Sunday. Labar Mishiso, with the besides the 6 days that preceded it. In other words, if the Sunday comes out toward the end of Pesach, so the 16th of Nisan may have been even 6 days earlier. The Afal Gav, the Chal Pesach Be'echod B'Shabbos, even though Pesach may have begun on a Sunday, the 15th of Nisan on a Sunday, Ad Echod B'Shabbos Ha'acher, until the next Shabbos, the Havu Nun Vav, it will come out that from the first, from the from Monday of Pesach under those circumstances where it began on a Sunday. So from that Monday until Shavuos, you will have, in fact, 56 days. Bahanach shis loich baslon, those 6 days, namely from Monday till the till Shabbos of Pesach, those 6 days, we don't care about. The krol lo nosiv elo miyom de maschil limini. The pasuk that said 50 days is a pasuk referring only from the day that I start the actual counting. So, in to say this over again, simply according to the proof that Rabbi Yossi Barbuda brought, I'm not convinced that the 50 days has to start from the 16th of Nisan. Continuing in the Gemara, E midi Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, if I would rely on his proof, Mimai de Biyomtov Rishon Koi, Dilma Biyomtov Achron Koi. Like we said above regarding the opinions in the first source, with regard to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira's proof that we saw in the second source, who says that we are referring specifically to the first day of Pesach. Maybe we're referring to the last day of Pesach. And Rabbi Yossi, who appeared on the third line from the top of this Amid, Nami Chozi Le Pircha, there was some type of weakness in what he began saying, V'hainu Dukomar V'oid, and therefore he needed to say V'oid, which you can see, there's a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. Find the parallel arrow above, and you can see that's pointing to the line where it was mentioned, V'oid Nemro Shabbos Lamato, V'nemro Shabbos Lamalo, the Gzeira Shava that we made between Shavuos and Pesach. And that part of Rabbi Yossi, that remains irrefutable. However, the first part of Rabbi Yossi, that was something that had a weakness to it. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi had to come on to the V'od. Gufa. This is a reference to that which was mentioned above. There's a little star that we included to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. If you scan up a few lines, you'll notice a parallel star. At that point, Rabbaye had said what he did, and here the Gemara is quoting that. Gufa, Omar Abaye, mitzvah lemimni yoimi, or mitzvah lemimni shvui. Abaye was brought into the Gemara earlier as saying that there's a mitzvah to count the days, as well as counting the weeks. At this point in the Gemara, we have a little no say in the outside margin. Deois bema moinim. We'll see opinions in how the counting is to take place. Yoimi and Shvui. We'll see references to different practices regarding days and weeks. So as we continue in the Gemara, number one, Rabbanon de Bei Rav Ashi, the Talmidim of the Yeshiva Rav Ashi, monu yoimi u monu shvui. They do like we do. They count the days and the weeks. Ameimar moni yoimi velo moni shvui. Ameimar said his practice was to count the days and not the weeks. And Ameimar is referring to the current time period as opposed to the time of the Beis Hamikdash. It is true that when the Beis Hamikdash was standing, then the counting would be days and weeks. However, today's counting is Omar Zecher LeMikdashu. It's only a commemoration of what took place at the time of the Beis Hamikdash. So since it's merely a commemoration, there is no necessity in making reference to the weeks as well. Hence, he would count only the days. The Mishnah that appears now is accompanied by a topic heading in the outside margin under the Nosei heading we've written, Hachonas Hashibolim Likras HaMincha, the preparation of the sheaves of barley in anticipation of bringing the meal offering, the Korban Mincha, the Mincha Soimer. Kotsruhu, we saw this in the previous Mishnah, how this took place with a great deal of fanfare. Kotsruhu v'nosnuhu b'kupos. They harvested the grains, put them in boxes, heviuhu la'azora, and brought these to the temple courtyard, to the azora of the Beis HaMikdash. V'ayu mehavavin oisoi b'ur, and they would dry them out in the fire. These grains, these sheaves of grains, were dried out in the fire in the Azorah. Kedei lekayim boi mitzvas koli, divrei Rabbi Meir. Koli is an expression having to do with fire and fire in the context of drying out grains. V'chachomim omrim bekonim ubekoyuchis choivtin oisoi kedei shelo yismaich. The grains were hit with kolchos is the stem of the kruv plant, and the idea here is that they would not use regular sticks for beating the grains, because shelo yismach, so as not to smash them. So after the grains were hit, were beaten with these kruv stems or kruv stalks, they would then expose them to the fire. Nosnuhu li abuv. Abuv is a vessel, a copper vessel. The abuv hoya minukov. It was a copper vessel that was full of holes. So they took the grains and put them, according to the chachamim, put them into this abuv. Kidei sheha ur sholeit bekulo. The holes in the vessel enabled the fire to reach all of the interior of the abuv, and hence dry out the grains in this fashion. Shotchuhu ba'azara v'ruch min hashevesbo. They would then spread out the grains in the courtyard, and the wind would blow over them. Nosnuhu l'rechayim shogrusos. They would then take the grains and put them in a grinder that would grind them, but not into a fine powder form, but rather a chunky type of grinding. Votziu mimenu isoron. This grinder would prepare or make convert the grains into soles. Soles being something other than kemach, which is a fine kemach is a fine powder, similar to maybe what we know as flour that you buy in bags. Soles being a coarser type product. So from this, from the grains, they would then produce isoron. An isoron is a measure. It's a much smaller measure than the raw material that they started with. We saw they would use three saw or possibly five saw of raw grain, and from that they would produce an isoron. Shuminupu b'sholosh esrei napo. It was achieved by sifting the material using 13 sifters. Vashar nifte, and after you extracted the isoron, the desired isoron of soles, the rest of it was redeemed. V'nechal l'chol odom, and anyone could eat it. V'chayov b'chalo poter min ha'maiser. Once the balance was redeemed, and people would process it into dough for their own personal use, there would be an obligation to remove the chalo tithe from the dough. It's worth noting that at this point, when it's made into dough, it's no longer part of the Beis HaMikdash property, because it's been redeemed. Upotem en ha-meiser, there is, however, an exemption of removing the meiser tithe, because at the point that the meiser tithe sets in ordinarily, that's at the point of miruach. Miruach is a point at which the pile of grains are smoothed out. The pile is smoothed out. In this case, it was in the Rishus of Hekdesh. And being that it was in Rishus of Hekdesh, that which is owned by Hekdesh, by the Beis HaMikdash fund, is not subject to a tithe necessity. Rabbi Kiva, on the other hand, disagrees. Mechayev b'chala uva maisras. He says, in addition to the chiyuv of chala, there is a previous obligation of removing the meiser tithe. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source in which Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim are featured. We saw them in the Mishnah, and here we'll see them again in a more elaborate form. Here the source talks about the idea of drying out the grains, the koli. Oviv, ze oviv. The posuk is that we're referring to is posuk perek beis of Sefer Vayikra. Let's say that again. Perek beis posuk yud dalid. And in the inside margin of our marked Gemara, you can see we've written in the posuk where it says ve'im takriv minchas bikurim lashem oviv kolui boesh geres karmel takriv es minchas bikurecha. So the brisa that we're seeing, you can see it's a framed section. The framed section continues to the next omid samach vav omid beis. This is a Tanaic source in our marking system. The framed sections indicate a Tanaic piece of material, brisas or mishnayas, and the framing sets them off from the rest of the Gemara text. Oviv. Ze Oviv. That means that Oviv is a reference to the beginning of the harvesting period. Kolui Bo'esh, Malame Cho Yisrael Mahavin Oisoi Bo'esh. This teaches us that they were expected to singe it or dry it out in the fire. Kedei Lekayim Bo'i Mitzvahs Koli, Divrei Revi Meir. By doing this, one will fulfill the Pusuk requirement of kolui bo'esh. So according to Rabbi Meir, the grains were taken as is and subjected to the fire for a few moments in order for it to dry them out. V'chachomim omrim ein ur lashon koli. The use of a direct subjecting to fire, ur is fire. Fire is not what's intended by the word koli, elo dovar acher, rather something else. Ha ketzad, so how is it to be accomplished? We're on the third line from the top. Abuv shokloyas hoyasham, there was a vessel known as abuv for the purpose of drying out grains. With manuka of kikvora, it was full of holes, like a sieve is full of holes. Kadesh Te'ur Sholetis Bukulo, with the holes in this vessel, and then the vessel being put into the fire would be able to reach all of the interior of the vessel. This, of course, is containing the grains. Oviv Kalui Geres. If the Pasuk would have said just that, so Eini Yodea, I wouldn't know im Oviv Kalui. Im geres kolui, what is subjected to the fire? Is it the grains in their whole state, or geres, or after they're ground into a coarse flour? Therefore, kishu omer bo'esh, the pasuk actually says oviv kolui bo'esh geres. So with the word bo'esh appearing, hifsik ha'inyan, that separates the kolui from the geres. Therefore, the kolui is not going on the geres. The kolui, meaning the roasting, that is going on oviv when it's still in its grain or raw grain form. The pasuk makes reference to the word karmel, which teaches me rach umole. The karmel being a contraction, the chof resh at the beginning of the word karmel. If you switch the letters around, you get to rach, meaning soft and full. In other words, the grains are fully developed, whereby the grain completely fills the casing that contains it. V'chein hu oimer. This is a reference to the fact or the idea that we just took a word and viewed it as a contraction. We find the approach to words in different places in the Tanakh also an approach to them as contractions. You'll notice in our Mivneh heading, in the outside margin, we feature a triangle. This is a series marking indicating Dugmois, examples, Shadorshin Loshin Nitrikan, where the Gemara Darshans, where this Brisa Darshans, contraction words. So the first example, the Ishbo Mibal Shalisha, Vayavei Leisho Lekim, Lechem Bikurim, Vesrim Lechem Sarim, Vekarmel, Betzikloinoi, Vayomer Tein Laom Vayochelu. The Pasuk describes a person coming to the Ish HaLakim, the prophet, the Navi, and presenting him with bread for the population to eat. What we want to do right now is simply focus on the word Betzikloinoi, which is in the Pasuk, and what does that mean? So it's a contraction word indicating the following. Ba, he came, v'yotzak, and poured out, v'yotzak lanu, poured out the breads, v'yochanu v'nove haya. He poured out the breads, and it was pleasant to us. The breads were pleasant to us. In fact, the Pasuk was describing a period of famine where the food that they were presented with gave them a sense of good feeling. The Omer, another Pasuk. This Pasuk is in the context of a couple involved with immorality. It says, Nis'alsa ba'ahevim, a description here of a person seeking out the services of a harlot. And the word Nis'alsa, Nosa v'nosan, they came to a deal, they came to an agreement. V'nale v'nismach v'nischate ba'ahevim. After they're coming to an agreement, then they go up and engage in that which takes place during harlotry. The Omer, Knaf Renonim Ne'losa. The word Ne'losa is explained momentarily. This Pasuk is dealing with a type of bird and how it lays its eggs. Nose Oile V'nischate. It carries its egg upwards and places it in the nest. Apparently, this kind of bird had a specific location, a high location for its nest in which it placed its eggs. And that's what's being described by this word, ne'alosa. And you could see the words that follow, nose, oile, v'nischate, are represented by the contraction form, ne'alosa. The Omer, and another pasuk. This pasuk deals with the encounter of Bilam's donkey and the angel that it met. Ki yorat haderech lenegdi. Yara saw, ra saw, not saw. It was overcome with fear. It saw, this animal saw the angel, and notzan veered off the path. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tona, they present an additional example. Actually, this is an example we saw above. Carmel, that's also a contraction of kar mole, a reference to the idea that the kar literally is a pillow, but if using your imagination, a pillow is something that has a fabric container, and inside of it, it has filling that stuffs it. Kar mole, the grain that's contained within the casing that contains it, the grain is full. It fills the casing, indicating a ripe grain. Rabbi Kiva, we saw mechayev v'chala uvemeisers. Rabbi Kiva was held as obligated in tithing, not only the chala tithing, which is a tithing that takes place when you knead the dough, but also in the earlier meisers tithing that takes place at the point that miruach of the grains is done. We saw in the Mishnah that after the grains experienced miruach, and they extracted the isoron of soles, the small measure of flour that they were going to use for the mincha, the rest of it was then redeemed and could be used by the public for personal use. Rabbi Kiva had said that the public that acquires the balance of the grains, they have to see to it that not only do they tithe the chalo tithe, but also take off or tithe the meisers. Omar Rav Kahana, we should point out before we go on, we have a topic heading on the outside margin under the no say. We've written, Miruach Hekdish. if Hekdesh is responsible for the miruach stage of the grain processing, poter o eno poter mimaisers, is that reason for an exemption or not for the meister tithing? So our Gemara opens up with Rav Kana. Rav Kana Omer Hoyo Rabbi Akiva. Rav Kana claims that Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion miruach hekdesh eno poter, that the miruach done by Hekdesh, miruach is the smoothing out of the pile of grains, even if it's owned by Hekdesh, that does not serve as a source of exemption for the Meiser tithe. To this, the Gemara raises a long question, which is really made of two questions, and we've indicated this with the long question marking that you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. There's a kuf that's encircled, and under which there's a little one with a vertical dashed line that descends from there, and you'll encounter a two, and the vertical dashed line continues beyond that. All of this section is presented as a kasha on Rav Kahana's explanation of Rabbi Akiva. So, just to review, Rav Kana claims that Rabbi Akiva's opinion that grains owned by Hekdesh at the time of Miruach does not result in their being exempt from the Meiser tithe necessity. Masiv Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes raises an objection. He cites a Tanaic source, after which we will see a problem with Rav Kahana's approach. The source features the topic we just finished referring to, namely the balance, that which is left over after the Isaron is extracted. Mosar Shalosh Soyin, the balance of the three sov of raw grains that were brought to the Beis HaMikdash for the Omer. Mosar Shalosh Soyim Halalu, Mahoyu Oisen Boy, what did they do with the balance? Answer, Nifde, they were redeemed. Venechal Lechol Adam, anyone would be able to partake of that. V'chayov v'chala, there was the chala tithe is obligated. The poter min ha-maisris, however, there is no obligation to tithe maisris. Rabbi Kiva m'chayov b'chala uva maisris. Rabbi Kiva disagrees with the Tanakhama, says there is a maiser obligation. Amru lo. So the first opinion that said there was a Meiser exemption, they said to Rabbi Akiva, Poide miad gizbor yochiach. They are citing something that Rabbi Akiva would agree with, namely the case in general of someone coming and redeeming from the Beis HaMikdash. Is the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash. For our purposes, we will simply refer to the Beis HaMikdash. Someone comes to the Beis HaMikdash and redeems grains that were previously held by the Beis HaMikdash. And the halacha is, Shechayav b'chala u'poter min ha-maisris. Those grains that were processed by the Beis HaMikdash authority, namely they were subjected to miruach and then redeemed. When they're processed into dough, they're no longer under the ownership of the Beis HaMikdash, but when the Miruach took place, it was still in the ownership of the Beis HaMikdash, and you, Rabbi Akiva, would agree that there is a Maisris exemption. Ve'im isa de Miruach Hekdesh eino poter, if, as Rav Kahana claimed, that Miruach done by Hekdesh does not serve as an exemption, my ko'amri lei. He. What were they arguing to him in the source where they said Omru Lo, where it said they had responded to Rabbi Akiva? Why in the world would they respond with something that he does not agree with? If you're trying to make a point, you cite something that the opponent agrees with. Now, if he is like Rav Kahana says, that Miruach Hekdesh doesn't exempt, so whatever they were saying to him is in effect the same thing as Rabbi Kiva said beforehand with regard to the Moiser of the Shalosh Soyim. Rather, what must be the case? It must be that Rabbi Kiva agrees that in the case of Poter Miad Gizbor, grains that were in the possession of the Beis HaMikdash at the time of Miruach are in fact exempt. And because of that, they argue to Rabbi Akiva, the same din should be with regard to the Moisar Shalosh Sa'im. And that was the difficulty as to why Rabbi Akiva holds that that is Chayav in Maisris. The Oid, Esvei Rav Kahana Bar Tachlifo Rav Kahana, the second question raised against Rav Kahana, from the following source, Rabbi Akiva, Mechayev Bechala V'Maisris, Rabbi Akiva, with regard to the Moisar Shalosh Soyim, he says that there is a Chala and Maisris obligation, Lefi Shalo Nitnu Mois Elo Letzorech Lehen, that when the original Beis HaMikdash funds were paid to purchase these grains, the holy money, the Kodesh, the Hekdesh, acquired only the Isaron that would be produced from those grains. In other words, the Moisar Shalosh Soyim, the balance, was never in the possession of Hekdesh. From this we can infer that had they been in the possession of Hegdish, had all of the grains, all three saw, been owned by Hegdish, then Miruah Hegdish, in fact, would have been a reason for exemption, which is unlike Rav Kahana. Elo am Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan rather offers a new approach. Talmud Oruch Hu Befiv Shor Bikiva. Rabbi Kiva had a tradition. Shelo nitnu mois elo letzorech lohen. The money that was paid by the Beis HaMikdash for the three saw, they didn't actually take possession of the three saw. Hegdish took possession only of that which they needed, namely the isaron from within the three saw. Therefore, we can see, as we said a moment before, that in general, if Hegdish was responsible for the Miruach, if the Beis HaMikdash fund was in possession of the grains at the time of Miruach, even Rabbi Akiva would agree that there is a Maisris exemption. As we go on in the Gemara, we encounter some new geometric forms with regard to our sugya. We see diamonds and double underlines in our and in the Mivneh heading. You can see the diamond, and that will feature the words Miruach and Gilgul. Gilgul we'll see only on the next Omid on Samach Zayin at the top. But in the meantime, we're highlighting two procedures. Miruach is the smoothing out of grains when they're still in their raw grain state. And Gilgul is a reference to the kneading of dough. We will see two types of owners highlighted with the double underline. Hegdish as an owner and Oyvei Kechavim, Gentiles as an owner. So turning to the Gemara, Omar Rava, Pshita Li, de Miruach Hegdish Poter. It's obvious to me that if Hegdish is in ownership of grains and the Miruach stage is reached under the ownership of Hegdish, that is reason for exemption from the Miser tithe. V'afilu Rabbi Kiva lo komachayev hosam. Rabbi Kiva as well, when he said in the case of the Omer that there was a Miser's obligation, that's only because elo shelo nitnu mois elo letzorech lehen, that when the Beis HaMikdash bought the grains, they only bought the Isaron quantity extracted from those three saw. Avo miruach hegdish ba'alma poter. But in general, when hegdish does miruach to grains that hegdish owns, there is a maestrous exemption. Miruach ho'ivei kichavim. What about miruach done by a Gentile? Let's point out, even though we were assuming this all along, that miruach is the point in the grain processing at which the Maisris tithe becomes a reality and an obligation. Let us say a Gentile is in ownership of grains when the miruach is done, when the goy does the miruach. So does that, is there a Maisris obligation Tanoi hi. This is a Tanaic controversy. Disanyo. We have a Tanaic source that continues to the very bottom of the page, which will complete this particular topic of Miruach v'Kichavim. And it says, Tormin Mishel Yisrael al Shel Yisrael, that one can tithe Jewish-owned grains to cover other Jewish-owned grains. U'Mishel Oivdei Kichavim al Shel Oivdei Kichavim, and one can tithe from grains acquired from Gentiles to cover other such grains. U'Mishel Kusim al Kusim. Kusim is a reference to a people whose conversion to Judaism was very problematic, and hence they're referred to as a category unto themselves, so that if one has grains that he got from Kusim, he can tithe them to cover other such grains. U'Mishel Kol al Shel Kol. Divrei Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda. You can, according to Rabbi Meir and Yehuda, you can tithe from Gentile grains, namely grains acquired from a Gentile that he had done miruach to cover Jewish-owned grains. What we see here is that miruach akum eino poter. This represents the side or the opinion that the miruach done by a Gentile does not cause exemption. And this comes from the underlying explanation that the ownership of land on the part of a Gentile of land in Eretz Yisrael does not mafkia, doesn't void it from the tithing obligation. There is a different opinion though, and that it follows. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shimon, Oimrim, Tormin Mishel Yisrael Shel Yisrael. U'mishel ovdei kochavim al shel kusim. U'mishel kusim al ovdei kochavim. This opinion equates ovdei kochavim with kusim, and hence you can tithe from one on the other. Avol, and here we emphasize, loy mishel Yisrael al shel ovdei kochavim v'shel kusim, v'lo mishel ovdei kochavim v'shel kusim al shel Yisrael. According to this opinion, you cannot take Gentile or kusi grains and use them to tithe from them to cover grains that one acquired from a Jew. And the reason for that is because this opinion, that of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, the miruach done by a goy causes them to be exempt from tithing. Now you can't use grains that have no tithing obligation to cover grains, namely Jewish-owned grains, to cover grains that are obligated. That's called Ein Mafrishin Minapotur Al Hachiyuv. So this opinion shows you that Miruach Akum does, Pater does, cause exemption. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.